Tonight's shiur is on Parsha Shlach, which is this week's Parsha, and the title of the shiur is The Greatness of Kalev. And Kalev, just in background information, was the Nasi of Shevet Yehuda, and the Parsha, Parsha Shlach, it goes into the story of the Meraglim. And a brief overview of the story is that Moshe sent out these spies, who were also the heads of their Shvatim, to go spy out the land of Israel, Eretz Yisrael, and they came back, and they said a lot of bad things about Eretz Yisrael, and they brought the morale down of Klal Yisrael. And Kalev, he ends up doing something great, and tonight's shiur, we're going to analyze the true greatness of Kalev. And it's kind of strange, because tonight we're going to work a little bit backwards, and we're going to start from the Pasuk mentioning the reward to Kalev, and we're going to follow the path of Rashi, but we're going to be going backwards in the Pesukim, and hopefully we'll end up with a fuller and more complete idea of what the greatness of Kalev was, Kalev ben Yefuneh. So the first Pasuk we're going to take up is Bamidbar Perek Yudalid, Pasuk Chaf Dalid, and the Pasuk is discussing the reward given to Kalev because of his perfection and because of his greatness. The Pasuk begins, V'avdi Kalev, my servant Kalev, Ekev Hayisa Ruach Acheres Imo, because he possessed another spirit with him, Vayimale Acharai, and he followed me, V'havi Yosef El Aretz Asher Ba'ashama V'zaro Yerishana. I will bring him into the land where Klal Yisrael will go into, and his offspring will inherit the land. So the Pasuk, it's describing the reward given to Kalev for his perfection and for his great deed. Now, what exactly is strange about this pasuk? It says, Ruach Acheres Imo. And Rashi, he asks a question. He says, what does it mean, Ruach Acheres Imo, that he had another spirit? A person only has one spirit. So what exactly does that mean? And if we look at Rashi number two, Rashi on the same pasuk, he gives an interesting idea, which I want to focus some of the shiur on. He says, Ruach Acheres, Shtei Ruchos, he had two spirits, Achas Bepeh, the Achas Belev. One was with his mouth, and the other one was with his heart. So he was a two-spirited person. What does this mean? Lamraglim Amar Ani Machem Be'itza. So the spies that he went spying with, he told them, oh, I'm with you. I'm with you in your plan. Uvolibo Hayalomar Ha'emes. But in his heart, he really wanted to say the truth. And because he did this, meaning because he had two spirits, and he told the Meraglim on the one hand that he was with them, but on the other hand, in his heart, he really wasn't with them. As a result of that, he was able to quiet everybody. As it says in the pasuk earlier, Vayahas Kalev, that Kalev, he quieted everybody. Shayusvurim, they believed, Shiyomar Kimosom, that he was going to be in line with their plan, and he was going to say like them, meaning when the Meraglim were disparaging Eretz Yisrael, they thought that Kalev was going to be on board with them, and he quiets everybody down. And this is what it says in the Sefer, Yeshua v'ashiv oso davar kasher im vaviv lo kasher im pi. I brought the matter back to him, not that which was with my heart and not which with my mouth. Okay, so we see an interesting idea about Kalev. The Torah is telling us through Chazal that the perfection of Kalev was that he was able to deceive the spies. And on the one hand, he told the spies that he was with them, but on the other hand, deep down inside, he really believed that they were wrong. And because of that, as Rashi says, he was able to quiet everybody down and he was successful. Okay? Now the question that emerges on this Rashi, I think, is that why is this such an important factor in Kalev's perfection? You would think that Kalev's perfection was that he actually stood up to the spies, and the actual moment where he stood up to the spies should have been his perfection. But Rashi's pointing out that part of his perfection was his ability to deceive the spies, and to be with them on the one hand, and on the other hand, not be with them. So why did he do this? That's one question. Why exactly did Kalev do this? And the other question is, what exactly was his perfection? What is Rashi pointing out here with regard to Kalev?
Maybe that was the only way that he could connect to them, is if at first they thought he was one of them.
Okay. All right. But he wasn't trying to. Why was he trying to connect with them? He was Why did he care about connecting with them?
Well, maybe because he had this effort to try to quiet them down. So he saw that because of their psychology, or I don't know how to put it, but that it would need to come from within, let's say. It would need to come from someone who seemed to really identify with their mission, and that then...
Okay.
I don't know, I'm kind of coming in like...
It's fine. Okay. So Racheli, well, we have to just let's just do one more piece, and then we'll just get into a more. Rashi's explaining the situation and what Kalev did. So it says Vayahas Kalev, and Rashi quotes the pasuk above. And if we look at number three, the pasuk explains what exactly Kalev did. It says Vayahas Kalev Esa'om El Moshe. It's pasuk Lamed, Parak Yigimel pasuk Lamed. So Kalev, he quieted the Am in front of Moshe. Vayomer alo na'alev yirashnu osa ki yachol nuchala, and he said that we're going to go up and we're going to inherit the land and conquer the land because we can do it. We're able to do it. And if you look at Rashi number 4, pasuk lamed, he says vayas kalev hishtik yes kulam. So he quieted everybody down, meaning all the meraglim and all of Klai Yisrael were quiet. They were all rambling and talking about how it was impossible to go into Eretz Yisrael, and he caused everybody to be quiet. And if you look at the next Rashi, he says, El Moshe, why does it say El Moshe with regard to Moshe or in front of Moshe? Lishmoa mashi daber v'Moshe. Everybody was quiet because they wanted to hear what he had to say about Moshe. Tzavach, the Omar, and he cried out and he said, V'chizu bilvad aso lanu ben Amram. Is this alone, or is this not, is this what ben Amram, meaning Moshe, has done for us? Hashomea hayasavar shabal v'saper b'gnusa. So people who were listening, they felt that Kalev was going to talk badly about Moshe Rabbeinu. Mitoch shaya v'libam al Moshe b'shvil divrei ha-meraglim. Because the people really had ill will towards Moshe because of what the meraglim said. Shasku kulam l'shmoa g'nusa. So everybody quieted down to hear Kalev disparage Moshe. Omar, he said, v'halo kara lanu asayam, v'horid lanu asaman, v'higiz lanu asaslav. Did he not do all these things? Did he not split the Red Sea? Did he not bring down the Mon? Did he not bring down the Slav? So Rashi is explaining what happened there. What happened was that Kalev, he was able to quiet everybody down. How was he able to quiet everybody down? Because everybody thought that he was going to talk badly about Moshe, and he ends up getting up there and he ends up saying the opposite. He says Moshe is great, and then he says Alo Na'ale, and he says we're going to go up and we're capable of conquering Eretz Yisrael. So the question is, what exactly was Kalev's plan? And why didn't he just oppose the Meraglim earlier on? That's the question. Why didn't Kalev say to the Meraglim on the spying trip, you guys are wrong? And if he sensed that they were going to basically go against him, he should have stopped them from the very beginning. So why is it that the Torah and Rashi are commenting and applauding Kalev for having these shtei ruchos? And so I want to take some possibilities. You want to just, now that we went through it. So what do you want to say again, Racheli?
That Kalev saw, based on the mentality of or the dynamic that was taking place in the Meraglim, that if he were just some outsider coming in and saying, you know, this approach is wrong, and really God and Moshe are able to take us in there as well, then they wouldn't listen to him. They would say, like, you have no idea what our strength is. You have no idea whether this is possible.
Okay, so Racheli wants to say that the Meraglim, they just wouldn't listen to him. So had he, basically, she's explaining that one of Kalev's perfections, at least pointed out by Rashi, is that Kalev recognized that the Meraglim, had he fought them in the beginning, they wouldn't really listen to him. So what exactly was his plan then? So why did he plan out? So he didn't, so they weren't going to listen to him, fine. So now what exactly was his plan?
So he must have seen that he needs to be intimately involved with their planning.
Okay.
And their thinking.
Yeah.
So that he could respond to the very issues that they were concerned about, and that so that the people could feel that he was really intimately involved with the whole issue. Not just somebody coming from the outside and commenting.
Okay, good. All right. Anybody else want to try?
One question though: Why is it okay that he was sort of a spy to the spy?
Right. That's the question. I mean, that's my question also. Why was it okay? Not only was it okay that he was a spy to the spies, but the Torah says that he was rewarded for that. Because the Pasuk says, Ekev haisa ruach acharasimah. because he had this duplicitous situation where he was with the spies, but he wasn't with them. That's why he was rewarded. That's his perfection and his greatness. So that's the question. Like, why did he? So any, I don't know if you guys.
Is it possible that first he actually did agree with them, or from the get-go, would he totally not on their side?
It's a good question. I don't think he was not with them from the get-go. I think this was his plan initially. But the question is, why was this his plan? Racheli gave a possibility, which I think is in line with the right approach. Does anybody else want to give a possibility? I don't think you guys heard her on full nine, which may be good, because then you guys could also offer possibilities there.
It kind of reminds me of like Aaron and when there was the golden calf, like that situation, because like if I recall correctly, I might be wrong, but he sort of attempted to stop all the Jews when they were not taking the oath of come down, and instead he like pushed off the inevitable by having them like bring all their gold.
By having them what?
Like bring gold. Like he pushed off the inevitable. He didn't like try to stop them in the beginning. He like pushed off.
Right.
And I'm not sure if his motivation was like protect himself, or he thought that it was too early for the people to like really understand what he was saying.
Right.
Like maybe in our situation there's a similar approach, and maybe he didn't tell them earlier what they were doing was wrong. He had to wait for like a better time because maybe he thought they weren't going to listen, or he was worried about his own life.
Okay, I agree with that. I agree that, and Racheli said the same thing, the same idea, which is that apparently he recognized that he wouldn't be successful with the Meraglim themselves earlier on. And that's why he holds back and he kind of plays with them and he kind of tells them that he's on their side. So I agree with that. But I think there's also a plan here. So the question is, like, what exactly was his plan? So I think his plan, and this is just the first step, because we're going to get a little bit deeper into Kalev's perfection. But I think his plan was that he recognized that the only way to get Klal Yisrael to turn the table was he saw that their emotions were all riled up, and he needed to create a situation whereby he could take that strength of those emotions and turn them the other way. So the idea is that Kalev, he recognized that if he had started up with the Meraglim earlier on, he wouldn't be successful. Why? Because the Meraglim would come out and they would initially quash Kalev, and they would try to use that to convince the people to go along with their plan. But because Kalev basically planned for that one opportunity, for the opportunity to get up there, and because he recognized that the only way to turn Klal Yisrael at that situation was to take all those strong emotions and turn them and completely reverse them. And you see that from the fact that Kalev, you recognize that they were all after Moshe. So they all thought that he was going to speak badly about Moshe, and he's taking those emotions and he's trying to turn them into the right area, into the area of Moshe being a great leader and being for Klal Yisrael. So I think the idea is that Kalev, he really recognized that the only way to save Klal Yisrael from the dangers of the Meraglim was to create this situation. The situation where all their emotions are riled up, and now you take those emotions and you turn them, you know, the other way. It would be like everybody's at a stadium and everybody's clamoring, and then you get that one speaker and he's able to turn everything around. So Kali, if you recognize that was the only way that Klal Yisrael would be able to turn everything around. It wouldn't be done through a slow, methodical process. So that was his perfection. His perfection was that he recognized what was best for Klal Yisrael. He didn't just think about himself and his own perfection, but he recognized that the best possible situation for Klal Yisrael to not be affected by the Meraglim was to create this scenario where he would get up and everybody's emotions would be riled up and he'd be able to take those and turn them into the right direction, into the right area. Right? So sometimes you can break a person down, like, methodically, and it works. But other times you need like a moment where you can take the person's emotions and you can show them why their emotions are misdirected. So I think that's what part of Kalev's perfection is, that he recognized that he planned on that from the very beginning. He recognized what the right approach was to affect Klal Yisrael. I think that's kind of imposing one with what you were saying, right? All right. So now I think we're going to get a little bit, I just want to get a little bit deeper into what that greatness was, okay? So if we look at that Rashi from the first set of Rashis in number 2, it says at the end of the Pasuk, that he was given land as a reward. What land was he given? So if we look at the last Rashi, number two, Rachel, do you mind reading number two? The last Rashi.
Sure. Asher Bashama.
Asher Bashama.
Shama. Chevron Tinatain Lo.
Okay, so what land was he given? Chevron. The land, he was given Chevron. So the question is, why was he given Chevron? Okay, and I think that it's important because Schar Va'onesh works in a way whereby a Schar reflects on the good and the perfection that you had in the first place. So the fact that he got Chevron would somehow indicate that Chevron's attached to some type of greatness that he had. So if you look earlier on in the Psukim, we see that the spies, they came across Chevron. So if we look at number 5 on the Mar Mekomo sheet, it's Bamidbar Parakid Gimel, Pasuk Chapez. It says, Vayalu Banegev, they went up from... Yeah, hello?
Yeah, can everyone just mute their phones?
Yes, please mute your phone. I know that's my mother-in-law, right?
For sure.
All right, just turn the mute button on if you can. It's a button on your phone that you press, and it mutes it. Or star 6. Okay, are we good?
Yeah.
All right, it's better. Okay, good. All right, so now we have to go back. What's the significance of Chevron? Why was Chevron given to Kalev? And maybe we can gain greater insight into Kalev's perfection as a result of Chevron being given to him. So if we look at number 5 in the Psukim, it says, Vayalu Banegev, they went up through the south, Vayavo ad Chevron, and he went to Chevron. Visham Achimon Sheshai Vesalmai Yilidei HaAnak VeChevron Sheva Shanim Nivnasa Lefnei Tzon Mitzrayim. So early on in the spy's journey, they come across Chevron. What's strange about the Pasuk? What's strange about it? Anybody want to ask? What's strange about it? Vayavo. The word Vayavo is singular. It's not plural. So it's strange. Why does a Pasuk, it starts off with Vayalu, and then it moves on to Vayavo. So the question is, why does it do that? So if we look at Rashi in number 6, and this I think is an important point, look at Chaf Beis, Vayavo al Chevron. So Racheli, can you read?
Thank you.
Okay, so why does it use singular? What's the reason?
Kalev
went by himself and he prostrated himself onto the Kivrei Avos, meaning Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and he davened. Why? Because he didn't want to be ensnared by their etzah, by their advice. Go on.
Yeah.
And that's why it says to him, meaning to Kalev, I will give the land in which he traversed, and that's a reference to Chevron. So somehow giving him Chevron was tied back to this experience, that when they were traveling in Eretz Yisrael, Kalev went to Chevron, and he was mispalo by the Kivrei Avos. And what was he mispalo with regard to? With regard to not being ensnared by the Chavira, by his Meraglim friends, in terms of being included in their plan. So what exactly is this? What was Kalev really worried about? So this is what I think is a chiddush, but I think this would give a little bit more insight into Kalev's perfection. You see, I think Kalev, his plan from the very beginning was that he was in line with the truth and in line with God. But on the other hand, he recognized that he had to be with the Meraglim. He had to be achas belev and achas v'peh. So on the one hand, in his heart, he believed that they were really false and they were untrue. But on the other hand, he was with them. He pretended like he was with them. So what do you see by this Rashi, by Chevron? That Kalev recognized that he was putting himself in a dangerous situation by doing so. Why? Because even though Kalev recognized that in his heart, he was really truthful and he was honest and he was in line with God, and he was playing this game with the Meraglim. But when you do that, it's dangerous for your own perfection. And Rashi, I think he's pointing out that Kalev, he recognized that there's a potential for him to actually, for it to actually change his mind and change his perception. And nevertheless, that's why I think it's important to recognize that he davened because of this point. What was he davening with regard to? He was davening with regard to the fact that he recognized the dangerous situation that he was putting himself into. So this gives like a tremendous insight into Kalev. Why? Because it wasn't just that he designed a plan for the betterment of Klal Yisrael, but he also was risking his own perfection in doing so. So he was putting himself in a situation whereby he could have been ensnared by the Meraglim, and he's Mespalo, and he recognizes that, and he's not immune to that idea. And he put himself in that situation because he recognized that this is the only way that Klal Yisrael would be saved, or the only possibility that Klal Yisrael would be saved. So what do we see from this idea of Kalev? We see that Kalev was really, he was really all about Klal Yisrael. He really wasn't about himself. And the greatness of Kalev, which is expressed in the first Pasuk, is the fact that he was able to, on the one hand, keep to his true ideas, and on the other hand, pretend like he was with the Meraglim. There's two aspects to his greatness. One aspect was that he recognized that this plan would be the most successful plan for Klal Yisrael. But the other aspect is that he was willing to give up on his own perfection and his own, because he recognized that by doing so, this would be dangerous. And he's putting himself, and he's putting himself in a situation whereby he might be ensnared, but he recognizes the only thing to do in order to save Klal Yisrael. So as such, you see Kalev. He wasn't, because he could, if he would have just stood up to the Meraglim, I'm sure he would have still been rewarded. He still was standing up to the Meraglim. He still would be perfected. But he was willing to give up on that and put himself in a situation where he'd be ensnared for the sake of Klal Yisrael as a whole. So that's like a tremendous greatness and a tremendous level of perfection. Okay? Does anybody have any other questions or any other possibilities on this? So you see how everything comes together here, I think, right? Make sense? All right. Anybody have questions on that point? Okay, but another thing that always bothered me about this is, what's the deal with Yehoshua, right?
I'm sorry, just on that point. So, giving him the Ochevron to keep, is that meant in some way to help his continued perfection? Or
I think it's a Schar V'Onesh idea, that in the sense that the Schar is reflective of his perfection. So the Rachel is asking, what's the purpose of giving him Chevron? Is it just to keep him in line with that perfection? I think it's more of to teach Klal Yisrael that idea. In other words, when they see the fact that Kalev was attached to Chevron, they should reflect on this greatness, on this idea of greatness. What's the idea of greatness? That a person has to risk his own perfection for the betterment of Klal Yisrael. So on the one hand, he could have been great without doing this, using this plan, but the fact that he was willing to risk it, and the fact that he was mispala by the Kivir Avos, recognized that he was willing to see the dangers. But nevertheless, he went through with it, and he went forward with it.
Okay, so that, but also, what does it mean exactly? Like, that's a place where his family was allowed to, have?
Yeah, it was their own city.
Territory of theirs.
Yeah, it was their own territory. It was almost like the Shvatim have their own...
Like that.
Okay. Yeah, so he had that. Chevron was really Kalev's. And you see in Shoftim, either Yehoshua or Shoftim, it goes to his family, Osniel ben Knaz, and his family ends up getting Chevron. It's mentioned there. Okay? So that's the incredible greatness of Kalev. But one thing that always bothered me about this Parsha is that what happened to Yehoshua, right? And it seemed like Kalev, you see that Yehoshua, he's rewarded for the situation, but he doesn't really take an active role like Kalev took. So it always bothered me, is it that Yehoshua was just a more passive person, or was there a reason, or what's the idea of that? So if you look at, before we go on, does anybody have a possibility? You want to offer a possibility? Do you hear the question? The question is, Yehoshua is always mentioned with Kalev, but he's not really, he doesn't seem to be taking an active role when you study the Parsha, in terms of, he reacts after the fact, but he doesn't really take the same active role of Kalev. And you'd think that Yehoshua would.
I don't know, it seems like based on what we're saying about Kalev, Yehoshua wouldn't necessarily be in a position to do that.
Good, good.
People would probably say, well...
Good, good. All right, so Racheli, I think, has the right approach, again. So I think, we're just going to develop the idea a little bit. If you look at number 7, it's Pasuk Vav, and it says, Yehoshua ben Nun v'Chalev ben Yefuneh min ha-tarim es-ha-aretz karu bigdehem. So after the whole event of the Meraglim, it says, Yehoshua ben Nun and Kalev, who were spies in the land, they end up tearing their garments. So what was interesting to me is that Yehoshua comes first, and you see from this Pasuk that Yehoshua was no slouch, that he wasn't just a passive person, individual, but he was willing to do the right thing. In fact, he's placed before Kalev in this Pasuk. So you see that Yehoshua wasn't that he was a passive person. So the question becomes stronger. What exactly happened to Yehoshua? Why wasn't Yehoshua an element in facing up to the Meraglim? Why did it only happen afterwards that he was Nikra Big Dan? And if you look, one last point, if you look at the Ramban on this piece, he says, Avdi Kalev, Lo Hiskir Yehoshua. In the first pasuk where we're discussing Kalev's reward, it doesn't mention Yehoshua. Why? Ki Pirish Le Kalev Schara, She Yorish Haaretz Asher Bashama. So the pasuk is telling you the schar, the reward for Kalev, for inheriting the land that he went to. Uschar Yehoshua Eino Roi Lefarsho Ata, Shehu B'Makom Moshe. But at this point in the Torah, it wasn't necessary to mention Yehoshua's schar, which was that he was going to take the place of Moshe. So, which implies that Yehoshua got a great reward for doing this. But he didn't really do anything. He didn't really do that much. The Hikdim HaKasav, the pasuk puts Kalev first. Ki im Kalev ben Yifunev, Yehoshua ben Nun. It puts Kalev first before Yehoshua. Ba'avur, ki hu hikdim lachlok al hamaraglam, bayas Kalev. So because Kalev was the first one to really stop the Meraglim and try to stop them, he's put first. Aval Moshe Amar Yehoshua ben Nun b'Chalev ben Yifuneh chayu mina an Hashem. But Moshe puts Yehoshua first. Why? V'avur godal malas Yehoshua b'chachma. Because Yehoshua was a greater chacham than Kalev. So the question, so this also proves the idea that Yehoshua was a great chacham. He wasn't just he was greater than Kalev and chachma. So what exactly happened to Yehoshua? So Racheli gave an approach, but I don't, does anybody else want to give a possibility? Why is Yehoshua not... Racheli's approach?
Yes.
Racheli wanted to say... Actually, I'm not going to tell you Racheli's approach, because I want you guys to think on your own. But, so what do you guys think? Because we're going to mention it. We're going to mention the answer. Why do you think Yehoshua is really, in the Torah, he's really absent in the whole experience with Kalev? And why was he granted such a great reward? Yeah.
After him.
Okay. All right. So you're saying that it was for the future, that it was too dangerous for him?
That it could be. I don't know. I guess in a sense, no one said he didn't stand exactly by what Kalev said.
Yeah, but he wasn't the one to do Vayas Kalev. So the question is, why not? Why wasn't he? Why wasn't it Vayas Yehoshua?
I got to imagine there was strategy there. I just don't know exactly why.
Yeah. All right. I think it fits in line with what we were saying, but. Yeah.
To manipulate a situation.
But Kalev is commended for it. It's part of his perfection that he recognized that this was the best. So why didn't Yehoshua do that?
Maybe not for a leader.
But Yehoshua wasn't the leader yet. He was still, Moshe was the leader.
No, but in the future.
Okay, alright. I hear that. So that was different than Rachel's approach. But you're just saying that for Yehoshua's sake, in terms of him being the future leader of Klal Yisrael, he recognized that he was in line to be the future leader of Klal Yisrael, and he sensed that by doing this, it would somehow impact the way people perceived him in a negative way. Right, Tamar?
Perhaps.
All right, perhaps.
Yeah, I think it could too.
Okay, I think Nicole said that. Yeah.
Is this from
wait, hold on one second. What?
Yehoshua?
No, he's just pointing. He's not criticizing at all. He's just pointing out why Kalev came first in one pasuk and Yehoshua comes first in the other pasuk. Yeah, I don't think he's criticizing. I think he's just saying that that happened. That's what happened. But the question, that's my question. Why? Where was Yehoshua? He was a greater chacham. He says he was a greater chacham, and he was the next leader of Klal Yisrael. So what happened to him? Yeah, somebody else. You guys were about to fight it out on the phone line. No? Alright.
What'd you say?
I thought you guys were going to fight it out on the phone line.
No, I kind of agree with her.
Okay. Tamar, you got one on your side. Good for you.
Thank you, Nicole.
I agree with Racheli. I'm on Racheli's side.
We still don't know what Racheli said.
I know, I don't want to tell you because I want you guys to... I don't want to bias your independent thought. Alright, Racheli said a different idea, okay? Racheli said that Yehoshua, he couldn't, the people and the Meraglim, they recognized that Yehoshua was the Meshamesh Moshe. That was what he was. He spent all his time in Ohel Moshe. That was how he was identified. So the idea, I think, that Rachel was saying is that Yehoshua, he couldn't be the same as Caliph. He couldn't do the same as Caliph because the other Meraglim would always suspect Yehoshua. See, Caliph...
Isn't that similar, in a sense?
Yeah.
Basically, he's watching what his role is.
It's not that he's watching it. It's that he couldn't do it. It was impossible. The Meraglim would never, ever relate to Yehoshua and expect him to basically go along. If Yehoshua got up, like the same way that Caliph got up, he wouldn't have had the same ability to quiet the people down. Because they would always suspect him of being in line with Moshe. He was the Mishamish Moshe. He was always with Moshe. Caliph, he was able to do it. He was able to accomplish this. So you see that Yehoshua, he's not criticized. Yeah?
It could be that it's like good cop, bad cop, and he knew the psychological way to be like that. Caliph was the bad cop, and he was the good cop.
Well, okay. What is that? I don't know what that means. Good cop. They were playing a game? I mean...
He needed both. He needed the one that they could, like, rebel against. People need, like, something that they're rebelling against. And maybe Yehoshua was that person, and Caliph was the other.
Yeah. So I think you're saying that Yehoshua really, he wouldn't be able to accomplish the same thing as Kalev. Why? Because the people related to Yehoshua as Moshe, and as Rashi pointed out, they wanted to rebel against Moshe. So Yehoshua would get up there, and he wouldn't quiet them down, and he wouldn't have the ability to have the same effect as Kalev. Whereas by Kalev, as soon as he got up, the Meraglim assumed that he would be on their side. But if Yehoshua had gotten up, they wouldn't necessarily assume that, so he wouldn't have had the same effect. And Yehoshua recognized that. He recognized...
Right, so the fact that he recognized it was why he was rewarded so well.
Right, he's not... The point is that he's not criticized because he was incapable of accomplishing the same thing that Caliph accomplished. So you only criticize somebody for not seizing an opportunity that they could seize. But here, Yehoshua, he couldn't seize that opportunity because he wouldn't have the same effect on the people that Caliph had because they would always be suspicious of him. So he's not criticized. He did everything that he could in line with his perfection. After the fact, he was Nikra of the Dam. With Kalev, he tried to convince Kal Yisrael that they were wrong. But in that moment, it was impossible for Yehoshua to have the same impact that Kalev had. So we don't criticize somebody if they can't... You only criticize somebody if they don't take the opportunity and they don't seize it. But like I said, Yehoshua, there's nothing he could do. He wouldn't have accomplished the same thing that Kalev could accomplish. Okay?
Okay.
Do you agree with that, or... Hello? You don't have to mute it.
Yeah, no, that's
okay. Okay, fine. So we have two different approaches, though. Just Racheli and myself and my approach, we're more in line with the fact that Kalev was able to accomplish this plan, more so than Yehoshua, because Yehoshua was always identified as the Mishamish Moshe, and as such, he wouldn't be able to... The people wouldn't be quiet and wouldn't expect him to go along, whereas by Kalev, he was... And that's why Kalev seized that opportunity, but Yehoshua, he was just incapable of seizing that opportunity, but he still did, he still was in line with Kalev, and he still did, with Kalev, try to influence Kal Yisrael after the fact. Whereas, I think Tamar and Nicole were saying that it was in terms of Yehoshua's role, that his role was as a future leader, and he didn't want to give off the perception of this duplicity, duplicitness? No, I don't know. The duplicity. And he didn't want to give off... Well, one's saying that the Meraglim, you're saying it was...
I know, I understand the difference, the essential difference, but yeah. I just think that, in a sense, they're correlated.
Yeah. I mean, it's both tied to the idea that Yehoshua had a certain role. And Racheli and I are just saying...
...strategy to not speak at this point, because he knew he wouldn't be effective.
Right,
that he had a role later that would be...
Right, so you're more tying it to his role in the future, whereas Racheli and I are more tying it to how the people perceived him and how. In that moment, the people wouldn't have related to him the same way they related to Kalev, and therefore he wouldn't have had as great of an effect on Kalev.
Maybe also he thought that it would have negatively affected Moshe.
Okay, what do you mean?
What do you mean? What do I mean?
Why would it have negatively affected? Why would it have negatively affected Moshe?
Because he had a connection to Moshe. He was more associated with Moshe.
I know, but so, the only problem I have with your approach is that Kalev is seen as a perfection on the part of Kalev. So the question is, why would the people relate to him improperly if he had done this. They would think of him as being duplicitous, but he's that's a perfected midah. In fact, he did this, Kalev did this whole thing to demonstrate his love of Klal Yisrael was greater than his love for himself. His own, he gave up on his own perfection to do this. So, of course...
The flaw was in the Meraglim.
What?
The flaw was in the Meraglim.
Yeah, the flaw was... Right, the flaw was in the Meraglim. What do you... I don't understand your point.
Alright.
No, what's your point? Sorry. No, no, what's your point? The flaw was in the Meraglim, so...
I don't understand,
Yeah.
Nothing, just continue.
No, no, what don't you understand? Tamar, what don't you understand?
Nothing.
No, it's okay.
No, I don't understand what you don't understand.
You're saying, let me just get this straight for the last time.
What?
What?
I have a question for them.
Wait, Rachel has a question on your approach. Okay, I don't want to restate your approach.
Tamar and Nicole. Okay. This is my question for you guys.
Good.
Do you hear me?
I'll let Nicole take this.
Okay. Just, if you're going to tie it to, like, some future, like, role that Yahushua is going to have with the Jews, then obviously, though, at this particular juncture, he's not trying to mess up his relationship now or later. So I just find it hard to, like, tie it to some, like, role he has in the future, because if anything, he'll improve the future relationship by, you know, showing them truth now, too.
No, but not if... I'm connecting it to yours. Not if he doesn't think he'll be affected. I mean, I agree with the point that he realizes that...
Oh, you're saying... You're just saying... You're saying...
Oh, okay, you're going to quote the Moshe. Of course you're going to say that.
Right, you're saying had he failed at this moment also, it would have affected their perception of him.
Affected.
Oh, okay. All right, I got it. Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
This is a moment.
Well, we're just explaining. I think we're explaining why he would have failed, and you're more explaining.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with what Rachel said. I don't think what we're saying is negates what she said.
Right. Okay.
You're saying why he would have failed, and I think we are
saying if he had failed, it would also affect Klal Yisrael's.
Failure would have affected the future.
All right. I agree with you.
Okay. We can also be friends.
All right. We're all friends. All right, I'm not gonna have to sleep on the couch tonight, right? Tomorrow. All right. So, I think both approaches are good approaches, but now we have a greater view of what Kalev was, right? And Yahushua, and how Yahushua played into that role. And one other point that I wanted to make is an interesting concept, which is. We're praising Kalev for being Echad Bepeh and Echad Belev, that he was one way with his mouth and one way with his heart, meaning inside he believed that the Meraglim were wrong and he was in line with God and going into Eretz Yisrael, but externally he was with the Meraglim. The Rambam mentions in Hilchos Deos that this is a bad midah to have. He says that it's actually an imperfection. So I want to just compare and contrast Kalev to this Rambam and what he says is bad about Echad Bepeh and Echad Belev. And furthermore, I just want to understand what the flaw is of Echad Bepeh and Echad Belev. If we look at number 9, the Rambam is in Hilchos Deos, Perek Beis, Halacha Vav. Tamar, can you read, because I know that you're listening now because you just participated, so do you mind reading number 9? It's the Rambam, Hilchos Deos, Perek Beis, Halacha Vav.
Okay. Asur la adam la negigat shmo bedivrei chalkos upito?
Upitui. So it's asur for a person to be manhig himself, meaning to act in line with words of smoothness and deceit. Chalakos and pitoi, which is like a smooth talker and deceit. So a person can't act like that. Okay? Go on. Kivara. And also, a person shouldn't be one way in his mouth and the other way in his heart. Rather, his outside should reflect his inside. Tocho, his inside, kivara, should be like his outside. meaning that the lave should be in the mouth. Whatever your thoughts are should be in your mouth. And you shouldn't be duplicitous. Go on. And it's also usur to steal the das, the mind of the brios, of other creatures, even the mind of a nachri, which is interesting that the Rambam points that out. Why would you think otherwise? What's he adding by saying afilu das anachri? What does it mean to be gonev das? How do you steal somebody's mind? So the Rambam's going to explain the cases. Go on. Tamar. Okay, you shouldn't sell a nachri, a non-Jew, basar nevela in place of basar shkuta. You shouldn't tell him that it's basar shkuta, and really you're selling him nevela, because you can't really tell the difference between nevela and shkuta. It's just in the way they're slaughtered, but in terms of the end result, it looks the same. So you can really deceive the nachri, and there's no iser for the nachri to eat it, but you shouldn't do it. Go on.
Velo min'al?
Yeah, or min'al.
Min'al?
So. Yeah. So you shouldn't sell him a shoe made out of an animal that died versus an animal that was shechted. It's the same type of concept. You wouldn't be able to tell the difference, but you shouldn't do it. Go on. This is an important one. People do this all the time, but you shouldn't invite somebody over if you know they're not going to want to eat with you. So you shouldn't send out an invitation to a wedding, for example, if you know for a fact that the person is not going to be able to come to the wedding. Go on. You shouldn't send a person gifts if you know they're going to refuse it, if they're going to turn it down. If you know beforehand that the person is not going to accept your gift, you shouldn't send them a gift. Go on. Last case. Yeah, chavayos. Yeah, Leftoso. Okay, this case is a guy opens up, you know, a barrel of wine, and he's opening it up to sell the wine, but then somebody comes over, somebody that he respects, and he says, oh, I opened the bottle for you. So that's the last case. And then he says all similar cases. Chen kok yotzebo, and finish it off. Even one word of deceit and genevas das, stealing somebody else's das, is asur. Go on. Tamar. Svas emes, veruach nachon, velev tahor mikol amal v'havos. So a person should have truthful lips and a good spirit and a pure heart from any iniquity and anything deceitful. Okay? So we have three different categories in the Rambam, and I just think it's interesting. One is, the first part he says is a person shouldn't be deceitful. That's asur la'adam l'hanei gatzmo b'divrei chalakot u'pisoi. And then he says, v'lo yiyeh echad b'peh ve'echad b'lev. And furthermore, another thing he says is that a person shouldn't be one way in his mouth and the other way in his heart, but rather his external should reflect his internal. And then the last idea says, v'asur lignov das abrios. And you're not allowed to steal other people's minds, and he gives all the cases of Gnevas Das. The question is, what is the relationship between these three things? Because the Rambam is putting this in one halacha, right? So the question that is bothering me, and I think it should bother you as well, is why does the Rambam categorize these three things in one halacha? And furthermore, what exactly is the issue with Echad Belev and Echad Epeh? So it's funny, like, if a person's thinking in their heart one thing and they say something else, aren't they just lying, basically? Aren't they just liars? Like, let's say you think you're a Democrat, and you tell other people you're a Republican. So you're just a liar. So the Rambam should just say, Asur l'shakir, or l'daber sheker. Why does he say, Asur lo ye echad bepeh ve echad belief? It's a strange way of putting it.
Like, all the examples that they gave, unless I missed it.
Yeah.
Like Kareg was doing it for the greater good of Hashem, not for his own personal ego. So maybe that's the issue.
Okay, all right. But what exactly is the problem with it? Is it the problem that, like, what's the problem with Echa Bepeva Echa Belev? Is the problem that's...
Well, if you're doing it for your own ego, it's a very, very low level of a human being.
Why? That's my question, why? What's wrong with it?
The betterment of Shalom Bayit, let's say, that might be a good thing. Like Hashem manipulated and he said to Sarah, tell Abraham whatever, that was one thing in the heart and one thing, but it was for a greater good. It was for the betterment of their marriage, as opposed to just something personal. You know what I mean? Like something that's just for your own ego.
Okay, all right. Anybody else want to try?
Yeah. It's extremely sneaky. It's evil.
Well, what's evil about it? I'm trying to identify it. Break it down.
It's not just lying. It's affecting, like you said, it's for the ego, but it's also affecting the other person.
Exactly. You go to a party and you say you're a Democrat, and really in your heart you believe you're a Republican. You believe in Republican ideals. You're not affecting. You're not hurting anybody. So what's the problem with that? That's the question. What's the problem with that? Why is that so? And why does the Rambam include that in speaking deceitfully? And
you are, in this case, you're not just basically lying. You are affecting other people, it seems.
Which case? There's three cases. You're right. There's three cases. Wait. There's three cases. One is Gnevas Das. That's when you, what my mother-in-law was referring to, which is where you basically sell somebody nevela, meaning an animal that wasn't shechted properly, and you tell them that it was shechuta. Then there's, the Rambam just says, lo ye echa bepev echa belev el tocho kevaro. That seems to be a general concept, that a person should always be in line with what their heart is, and they shouldn't say, for example, I'm a Republican, or they shouldn't say, let's say somebody has a plan, and you don't really believe in the plan, you shouldn't say, oh, I'm with you in the plan, this plan's great. Shouldn't do that if you really don't disagree. That's the echa bepev echa belev. And the first case the Rambam brings down is that a person shouldn't be deceitful and sly and smooth-tongued. You shouldn't be a smooth talker. So those are the three cases. So the question that I ask initially is, what's the relationship between all these three cases that the Rambam brings down, and what is the essential flaw? Yeah, we can say that it's a bad thing and a person's egocentric, but I want to understand the flaw better. And why doesn't the Rambam just say that a person's just lying in these cases? He doesn't say lying. He says echad, the middle case, echad bepev echad belev. What exactly is the flaw there? Why is that such a... What's the problem? But I agree...
Why all those three things are connected at all?
Yeah. They're in the same halacha. The Rambam puts them 1, 2, 3 in the same halacha. So what's the connection between...
One is like they're all lesser degrees of each other, but once you start like the name of staff, then you actually... yourself might believe that it's okay, and then really deceive someone, and then like outright lie.
Let's just take the middle case, which I think is the most interesting. Let's say a guy goes to a cocktail party, and he's at the cocktail party, and he's eating some nice Franks and blankets, and he says, "I believe that Israel should give up the West Bank," but inside he really believes that they shouldn't. So what's the problem with that? Why is that so bad?
Not bad, but once somebody else starts agreeing and then you realize you riled them up, they'll say, wow, it's very easy to deceive people. I didn't really.
But then you're not saying that in itself is bad, you're just saying it leads to bad.
Right.
But he says lo yacha bepav echa belev. I mean, he just says that that's a bad thing. El tocho kevaro. I don't know. I would tend to think that the thing itself is bad. That trait is bad. Why is it bad? Trying to yeah. Okay, so you're saying it's more of an idea, and the flaw is that it's a breakdown of society or social relationships?
Yeah, so yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think you can say that, like, if a person gives a gift that was gifted or...
Right.
You know, I don't know, tell somebody that they're recruiting a kosher and doing the bela, or whatever, not the bela, whatever they said it was, then it's not really gonna, like, change anything about, you know?
Right.
It's like more of a social, like, it's not good if people are... not being upfront, then...
Okay. But you're saying it's... Racheli's saying it's more in terms of other... What'd you say?
They think that, like, actually, they actually did affect it. In reality, that's not the case.
I know, but... Yeah?
No, I was going to say that if you're lying to somebody, you're going to be able to affect it. You're
Okay, good. I like that. That's step one. She said that my mother-in-law said that the idea is that when you lie to somebody, it like demonstrates a lack of respect for the other person. Right? That's a good point. I like that. All right. So I just wanna. Anybody else wanna try? Tamara, you've been active tonight on the phone lines. Debbie Schwartz, very quiet. Speak up. All right.
I'm just thinking.
Oh, okay. All right. So I'm just gonna try an approach, okay? And then we'll close up the shir. So Echad Bepeh Ve'Echad B'Lev, what's the problem with that? So I think the problem, I was starting with that case, because that case to me is the most interesting case. The problem there seems to be that the essence of a person is really belief, is the internal, and a person's beliefs and thoughts. And when a person speaks to other people, they're presenting themselves to other people, and what they're presenting who they are to other people. So the idea is that there's a disconnect there in terms of what the essence of a person really is and how they're presenting themselves. Because the essence of a person is really belief, is really the internal aspect of the person, and they're presenting themselves differently, in a different way. They're presenting themselves really as a Republican when their true beliefs and their true ideas are really democratic. So there really is... So what is the problem? The problem is that you're really denigrating the Tzelem Elokim, the role of the Tzelem Elokim. Why? Because really the person's essence is really the Tzelem Elokim, the internal part of a person. You know, a person's thoughts and their beliefs and their everything that comprises. And by not presenting your Tzelem Elokim, you're really identifying yourself as something other than the Tzelem Elokim, as something other than your thoughts and your feelings and your opinions. So the idea is that the flaw in Echad B'Lev and Echad B'Peh is that you're not identifying yourself by the Tzelem Elokim, which is what you are, which is your essence. So in presenting yourself differently than your Tzelem Elokim, it's almost like a denigration of the Tzelem Elokim. It's a lack of respect for the value of the Tzelem Elokim, for the value of the human soul and the human and the internal aspects of humanity. And I think that explains the other two cases, because the idea of gonev das, it's a funny word. Why is it used gonev das? The idea is that you're really manipulating the other person's essence. You're not just lying to the person, but you're manipulating the other person's das, the other person's mind. So it also that case also demonstrates a lack of respect for the Tzelem Elokim, that the essence of humanity, that it's not. And you see that also by the Nachri, the fact that a Nachri is included, because every human has the Tzelem Elokim, even a Nachri, even a guy, a non-Jew. And the idea is that you don't have a right to manipulate the Tzelem Elokim of another, because it demonstrates a lack of respect and a lack of appreciation of what the idea of the Tzelem Elokim is. And I think the first idea of Asur La'adam Mohanagat Medivre Chalakos Upitoy is also in line with that. Because a deceitful person, he's really utilizing, you know, his mind and his emotions, he's really utilizing to the furthest extent in the wrong path, in the wrong way. So you see that a person is really manipulating his own Tzelem Elokim. He's really utilizing his Tzelem Elokim for deceit. And a deceitful person is typically an intelligent person. They're a person that needs to utilize thought and strategy in order to be deceitful. So you're really manipulating the Tzelem Elokim and turning it and utilizing it for another direction. So I think the one common theme in this Rambam is that all these three flaws reflect a lack of appreciation and respect for what the Tzelem Elokim is in the human being. And each case reflects that. When a person is deceitful, they're really manipulating their own essential, their own lev and their own ideas. And when a person is echad b'lev and echad b'peh, it's really a demonstration that he doesn't identify himself by his Tzelem Elokim. He's identifying himself to others by something that's not his Tzelem Elokim. So it's really a denigration of the Tzelem Elokim. And the idea of nevas das is that you're manipulating another person's Tzelem Elokim. It's like a lack of respect of really what the person is, the other person. The other person is not just a body, but he's a Tzelem Elokim. And if you recognize that and respect what that is, then you won't manipulate the other person. So all these three cases really are in line with that concept. But what about Kalev? See, by Kalev, he eventually did come out to all of Klal Yisrael, and he demonstrated what his thoughts were in terms of what his lev was and what his thoughts were. So you see that by Kaliv, it was only temporary. It really wasn't who he was. He wasn't an Echad Bepev, Echad Belev. He, in fact, is the opposite. He was doing Echad Bepev, Echad Belev in order for him to demonstrate what his true essence was and what he truly believed. So the whole thing was, it's a completely different idea than what the Rambam is saying. The Rambam is talking about a person who does this continually. This is what his personality is. He's constantly being involved in lying to people and presenting a different image to others than what he really is. But by Kalev, he was just doing it as part of a plan to really come out to everybody and demonstrate what his essence was. So the idea is that it's a completely different situation by the Rambam and the situation of Kalev. All right? You guys hear the point, or do you disagree? Have a different idea? Anybody? Okay. So I think that's why also the Rambam doesn't say l'shachir. The idea isn't that it's bad to lie, but the idea is that you're not identifying yourself by what you truly are. You're presenting a front to other people, an image. But what you really are and who you should identify yourself by is by your thoughts and your beliefs and your opinions. That is who you are. That's how you should present yourself to others. Okay, so that's the end of the share. We're concluding tonight's share. And I just want to summarize some of the key points that we made in the share tonight. One point we talked about was Kalev and his greatness, and we said that there are two aspects to Kalev's greatness. One aspect was that he planned it out in the best possible way that he should have the greatest effect on Klal Yisrael. And the way he planned it out was by creating a situation or a scenario whereby Klal Yisrael would be riled up and their emotions would be high, and he would use that to the benefit of perfection and bringing them aboard the whole goal of going into Eretz Yisrael. So he really was able to really manipulate the Meraglim temporarily in order to create that situation, because he recognized that that was the only situation that Klal Yisrael would be affected by. And then we also saw that he was willing to risk his own perfection by doing so. And he's misfollow to Hashem because he recognizes that by putting himself in this situation, he would be ensnared and it would create a situation whereby he might lose out on his greatness and his perfection. But that is the greatness. He was willing to take that risk for the benefit of Klal Yisrael. And then we had the idea of Yehoshua, that really, it wasn't that Yehoshua was really worse than Kalev in any way, but he just didn't have the same ability to seize that opportunity like Kalev. And we said for two reasons, either because he wasn't perceived in the same way as Kalev was, because Yehoshua was the Meshamish Moshe, and the other possibility was that if he had failed, it would have been more drastic in terms of his leadership in the future. And then the last idea we said of Echa Bepev, Echa Belev in the Rambam is that is really a reflection that a person's denigrating the value of his soul, of its Tzal Melukim. By not identifying yourself to others by who you are, by your essence, you're really demonstrating that that's not what you are. And the reality is that that is who you are. Your Tzal Melukim is your essence. So that's how you should present yourself. And the other two flaws are also in line with that. Being deceitful is manipulating your Tzal Melukim. And Gonev Das is manipulating somebody else's Tzal Melukim. You're really being gonev their das. You're stealing their das, meaning you're manipulating their das. It's a lack of recognition and respect for the essence of humanity as being a tzal melukim, a reflection of God's creation. And as such, that concludes tonight's share. Anybody have questions on the share? On the main points of the share? All right. So if not, have a good Shabbos and have a good night. Okay?
Thank you.